September 7th. And into the forest I go, to lose my mind and find my soul. That's a quote from John Muir that Bridget sent me about a year ago when I first started thinking I would come here. I use it as my computer screen wallpaper, so I see it all the time. Inset in the gorgeous collage of fern fronds, glossy leaves, and water droplets Bridget created for it. I lost my mind quite a long time ago, of course, as you know, if you've read much of my work or listened to me sing. I was just, in fact, singing and recording Neil Young's Heart of Gold, and the lines, "I've been in my mind, is such a fine line," stuck with me, twice. It is a very fine line. In my mind, I mean. I've been in there. Very, very fine. Sometimes scary fine. Searching for a heart of gold, trying to find your soul, same thing in the end, maybe, I don't know. Yesterday, I bought a frame for another collage Bridget made me a couple of years ago. It looks like a series of pink and red and black and white and striped and dotted bulbous hilltops, a Chinese-type effect. All those soft, rounded mountains in such lovely shapes and shades. So beautiful, with this quote from Aristotle floating up over the horizon like a sun. A man who is content to live alone is either a beast or a god. Living alone, in my circumstances, is not a matter of contentment, I can assure you. But you can look as long as you want for a heart of gold. Doesn't mean the one you had will be coming back or that you'll find another one. So you'd better be able to take it. Make your own heart suffice in as many small ways as possible. And wait. An unwillingness to settle for less may, I suppose, be a mode of contentment. I don't know. I can tell you this. I am both a beast and a god. Not by turns, depending on when you might see me or my mood. I mean both. Together. Always. A beastly god. A godly beast. Maybe that's what it takes, along with the forest, to find your soul. Or a heart of gold. Maybe they're the same thing. I'll let you know if I ever get there. I just watched a pretty dark movie, The Big Heat, a Glenn Ford noir movie from the 50s. It darkened my mind, my soul. I felt depressed, bereft, alone. Maybe that's why I thought of Neil Young, wanted to sing that song. This world, all the hearts of gold getting knocked off. And hearts like his and mine still beating. Why? As I headed back to the kitchen, looked out the window, I saw the most amazing thing. A rainbow. A right across the whole sky, pot of gold type rainbow. Bright. All the colors distinct. And even more amazingly, I saw some rain. Very soft, pleasant rain. Rain I could walk out into and through to take photos of the rainbow, which probably won't come out, but so what? Take them anyway. I stood and watched that rainbow until it softened, almost out of sight. Some neighbors with their kids out in front of their houses, pointing, laughing, marveling, just like I was. And the rain, one of those rare rains I've witnessed since I got here almost exactly 3 months ago now. It was like the water in Watershed Park, magical. I have never loved rain so much, for itself, for its rainbow. I can hear it becoming stronger right now as I type, a real patter on the roof. My pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, my heart of gold, my lost mind, my fine soul. Even if it only lasts a few minutes, I will be at least briefly more god than beast. John Muir would approve, even if I didn't go to the woods today looking. I had a very nice thing happen yesterday, an email from a professional colleague I never met, Paul Lynch, who just published an article in College English, one that makes reference to my first book, Writing, Teaching, to open a conversation about the role of spirit in teaching. He sent me a kind note and a link to the essay which I just read. It's quite beautiful. I won't go into all the details, but one thing he makes reference to from my book is a question I used to ask myself back then, intentionally and repeatedly, to help me think reflexively about the material work of making a classroom function well. Why am I here? In the book, I write about the effect and implications of that question, highlighting sequentially each of its words. When I wrote back to him, the question that arose in my mind and stuck there, kind of awkwardly, was this variant on the original one. Why am I still here? There is, I know, a part of me that believes I shouldn't be. Like Olympia, it has layers. The most obvious, though least consequential, has to do with my retirement. I am not here any longer, literally at least in a professional capacity, and most especially in the classroom, and I never will be again. But the vestiges of the man who was once there remain to some extent. I hope and believe he will not still be here at all one of these days, having overcome the temptations toward teaching, a mission that is quite worthy in the places that others come for learning, but is out of place in a normal social universe, particularly one where I want to stay small. Another layer is the stereotypical sort of survivor's guilt I still feel quite deeply in the aftermath of Carol's passing. I wish she were still here. If that could happen by making me not here, I'd take it in a second. Beyond that, I am not here, at least not as a whole person, in her absence. I keep thinking I will be, believing I can be, any one of these days. But right now, I'm not. Simple as that. My guess is I never will be, but I'm often wrong about so many things. So I'll just leave that be, wait and see. And then there is the leftover latent despair that comes after such a loss and stays. There's a bluegrass song I like where an old man sings, "The lures of this old world have ceased to make me want to stay." That's how I feel quite often. At one point, my doctor back in Pittsburgh asked me routinely if I ever feel depressed. I use that line to try to explain to her what it is like to look around this world and not see much that's worth staying here for. It's not in any way depression, nor does it deny that the time I have left to serve here is of value, great value to my kids I know, and maybe to a few others who walk with me in spirit, or all those trees that might enjoy my company. I sometimes wonder, by the way, whether the trees in Boyce Park are curious, even sad, that I don't come there any longer. Sudden stops like that, well, they are concerning to experience, a kind of dying from the point of view of the other. In any case, the lures of this old world may not make me long to go, but they don't make me want to stay either. And as to why I am still here, I guess answering that question is above my pay grade. If I happen to persist in some way after I'm not here, and there is someone up there who has the right security clearance to explain things like that, I have a whole bunch of other whys to get through before I get to this one anyway. But I'm not there yet, even if I'm not quite here. From this liminal state between, the lures of this old world look kind of flimsy, filmy, see-through-y, at least compared to the lure I used to have beside me every day. I've written several times previously about such liminal states where the line between death and life blurs. It always makes me nervous to do that, how easy it might be to misunderstand, to think, say, that I have some special knowledge as a result of my trauma, a weird, fake Carlos Castaneda-type thing. I don't, and I don't think he did either, though I do quite often borrow his death-on-the-shoulder metaphor. Or, even worse, that it is an inbuilt feature of my being, ESP, for example. I prefer to think of it as just SP, which we all have built into our base model, no need of any expensive upgrades, the one that includes the moonroof, say, if and when we want to use it. Or worst of all, that I have had some special, self-induced, hands-to-the-forehead type experience transform me from the ground up. That simplistic born-again mentality that afflicts certain Christian sects. Yes, Christ did raise people from the dead literally, and he does transform many afflicted bodies with his touch. But that guy standing in front of the congregation ranting is, I hate to tell you, not Christ. And neither am I. Being born again is possible, but it's more like growing up again. It takes work, lots of it, which takes time. Still, I want to insist that our customary ways of marking boundaries between these two states, life and death, useful and necessary as they might be for our day-to-day lives, are just not accurate. I recall, for example, all the funeral masses I served as an altar boy. Many dozens of them, my trying to figure out from my detached perspective what was really going on there. This strange intermediate realm we all seemed to inhabit for those hours before the coffin was lowered into the ground. I never felt as if the deceased was quite with us, an individual presence. But I also knew that we weren't quite all there either, as completely separate individual presences, I mean. It was more as if we were hovering together for a while in a space that was neither here nor there, not quite life in its diurnal aspect, nor death in its eternal aspect, but just as real as both, a place where the very thin veil or mist that separates these two companionable states becomes translucent, partially permeable. And it's not like the horrific death in life that Coleridge configures as a spectral skeleton in his rhyme, nor the more honorific life and death that Dante configures as he is led through the realms of afterlife by his guide. It is more like a vague space where the laws of temporal sequence that organize experience here are temporarily suspended. Those minutes, or hours, or weeks, or months, or even years that it takes to properly grieve might take no time at all, or forever. Or, more accurately, as they are felt, they are both instant and eternity simultaneously. I was just thinking that thought today as I got out of the car after my walk. How we humans dread the thought of an eternity of suffering that Christianity, at least, poses to frighten us toward betterment. My thought was, just now, the instant it took me to step out of my car, given what I happened to be thinking about right then, was itself an eternity of darkness. And I've had long stretches of bright light that, right now, looking back, appear to have been an instant. Either way, we just need to traverse those measures of time for as long as it takes. I have no idea why. That, as the song says, is for the by and by, whatever that means. I'm sure if you think about it for a minute, you will remember states of mind just like that. They are quite common when we are children and don't require the impetus of death to incite them. Maybe it's just watching an ant walk by on the ground. And take a look at Ezra Pound's Peace and Cantos, where that's exactly what he does. While he's locked in an outdoor cage in Italy in the aftermath of World War II, contemplating his dreadful arrogance, awaiting his dire fate. If you think adults can't do that too, when they are under enough duress to cease to care about this world's lures. For adults, it usually takes that great a loss to disorient us enough from the delusion of world lure time to fully grasp what we are, and what most matters on our path through this world. The one we have to wend our way on to get to whatever, if anything, is next. Where, if we're lucky, we might get an answer or two to our most pressing questions. Where instant and eternity, I'm hoping, amount to the same thing.